Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Friday, the 24th of February. I am Jane Ayeke Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Crispin Mwakide with what you've been saying on social media.
In today's edition, police in South Africa use tear gas to disperse rowdy anti-immigrant protests in Pretoria.
We don't know why they are issued, why all the time they are attacking us. We are not working under government. We are working for our own self. We are fighting for our life.
And on social media front, some users express shock and outrage at the xenophobic violence in South Africa.
And FIFA President Gianni Infantino visits Zimbabwe as opposition against re-election of Issa Hayatou as president of the Confederation of African Football grows.
Is that bridge that we need between the older generation of administrators and the younger generation?
But before that, let's hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Isaac Mugabe with DW News. Malaysian police say a lethal chemical was used to kill Kim Jong-nam, North Korean President Kim Jong-un's estranged brother. He was poisoned by two women who wiped a highly toxic substance on his face at Kuala Lumpur's International Airport last week. The VX agent is classified as a weapon of mass destruction by the UN. Malaysian authorities are now investigating where the toxic came from.
The chemical is illegal. It's a chemical weapon. We are investigating how it entered the country.
U.S. officials met with Mexican officials to affirm positive relations, but success was limited. The U.S. Homeland Security Chief said immigration operations would not use military force, contradicting what President Donald Trump has said in recent days. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson played it safe, acknowledging generally that the U.S. and Mexico are in a period of disagreement without putting any specific dispute under close scrutiny. Police fired stun grenades, rubber bullets and water cannons this Friday as the latest wave of anti-immigrant protests broke out in South Africa's capital, Pretoria, while President Jacob Zuma condemned anti-foreigner violence and appealed for calm. Resentment against foreigners has sometimes turned deadly in South Africa amid accusations that they take jobs from locals in a country where unemployment is above 25%. Others are blamed for drug dealing and other crimes. You are listening to W News coming straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. The UN Human Rights Office has said it's deeply disturbed by the lenient 18-month prison sentence handed down by a Tel Aviv military court against an Israeli soldier who killed a badly wounded Palestinian assailant as he lay on the ground. The spokesperson of the rights office, Ravina Shamdasani, decried a chronic culture of impunity in Israel when it comes to soldiers involved in the conflict with Palestinians.
While the prosecution and conviction are very welcome steps towards accountability, the punishment, which is excessively lenient, is difficult to reconcile with the intentional killing of an unarmed and prone individual. We've been in touch with the Israeli authorities on this issue multiple times over the years. This is a chronic culture of impunity that we're talking about.
At least 42 people have been killed in a car bomb attack reportedly carried out by the so-called Islamic State IS militant group in a Syrian village held by rebels a day after the jihadist group was driven from its last stronghold in the area. The blast in the village of Susian hit a security checkpoint controlled by rebels fighting under the Free Syrian Army banner. President Omar el-Bashir has ordered Sudanese authorities to assist the delivery of international humanitarian aid to famine-hit South Sudan through the country. In a rare show of solidarity, al-Bashir ordered his officials to offer all necessary facilities to ensure that humanitarian aid reaches South Sudan through Sudanese territories. Early this week, South Sudan, the world's youngest nation formed after splitting from the north in 2011, declared famine in some regions, saying 100,000 people faced starvation and another million were on the brink of famine. For more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.
This is DW Africa Link coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Now, anti-immigrant protests in South Africa's capital, Pretoria, turned rowdy, forcing the police to use rubber bullets, tear gas and water cannon to try and disperse rival crowds. South Africans accuse foreigners of taking their jobs and involvement in crime. President Jacob Zuma has condemned acts of violence and intimidation directed at African immigrants living in South Africa. Earlier this week, angry mobs attacked Nigerians, destroying property and looting shops belonging to migrants in townships around Pretoria and parts of Johannesburg. From Johannesburg, Tuso Kumalo reports.
Police had no option but to use tear gas and stun grenades to defuse tension between foreign nationals and locals who confronted each other during the anti-immigrants march. From the start, the march turned chaotic after Attridgeville residents who were not part of the march barricaded roads with burning tires and stones. They harassed journalists on the scene before storming into Pretoria Central Business District, where they vandalized some shops. Some protesters covered themselves with balaclavas, carrying sticks and other weapons. On the other hand, some foreign nationals also gathered on the street corners, armed with pangas and other weapons. One of the protesters, One Mwaneri, a Nigerian national, rejected job-stealing accusations from the locals.
Why all the time they are attacking us? We are not working under government. We are working for our own self. We are fighting for our life to be living in South Africa in peace.
A Somali national who only wanted to be known as Mohammed warned South African government against allowing attacks on foreign nationals to continue.
The government of South Africa, they must know that the whole world is watching this kind of xenophobia. It was almost all that past years, it happens and it happens and it happens and again.
However, Muhoka Lekhanyane, the leader of the Mamelodi concerned residents who organized the march, denied their march was xenophobic.
We are against any xenophobic attacks. Our march is to take our objections to the Department of Home Affairs, to the Department of Labor, and to the police.
A large contingent of police had their hands full monitoring the march, while others had running backlies with loose groups of protesters who stormed the city center. A helicopter hovered around the city alerting police of hotspots. Meanwhile, members of the National Association of Nigerian Students protested at the headquarters of South Africa's mobile giant MTN in Abuja, Nigeria. They gave the company and South African citizens 48 hours to leave the country or face violence.
Tuso Kumalo reporting. Crispin, I suppose people have already been commenting on this subject, isn't
it? That's very true, Ayeko, on the anti-xenophobia protest in Pretoria. Abdul Wahabu so commented on our Facebook page saying, if they, South Africans that is, don't need you in their country, leave it for them.
But what if you've invested in that country, Crispin? You have stuff like business, friends and family. What do you do then? How easy is it to leave them behind?
Actually, that is precisely what I asked Abdul Wahabu. I posed this same question to him and this was his response. If I am there, I will pack my things and go. South Africa is not the only place in the world.
But why should South Africans be attacking business premises or fellow Africans in the first place?
This issue has been dogging South Africa ever since the end of apartheid. And things got worse in 2008 and then again in 2015. Scores of foreigners have been killed by angry mobs who accuse them of taking away their jobs. At this time, Nigerians are bearing much of the brunt. And Rilwanu Ibrahim Uba called on all fellow Nigerians to leave South Africa.
Well, Crispin, we'll leave it at that for now and probably we'll get back to that if time allows us a little later. But let's come back home and talk about some news here in Germany. It turns out that 2016 was the year in which China overtook the United States to become Germany's biggest trading partner for the first time. France remained Germany's second largest trading partner while US was pushed to the third position. The news comes as Berlin continues to worry over US President Donald Trump's protectionist leanings. For more on that, Celia Freilich reports.
This latest development is likely to be welcomed by the German government, which is keen to safeguard global free trade following US President Donald Trump's threats to impose tariffs on foreign goods getting into the US market. The US is accusing Germany of exploiting a weak euro to boost its exports. On the other hand, China is being accused by Donald Trump administration of keeping its currency artificially low against the dollar to make Chinese exports cheaper.
We don't have any good deals. In fact, I'm trying to find a country where we actually have a surplus of trade as opposed to everything's a deficit. So we can't let that happen. With China, we have close to a $500 billion trade deficit. So we have to do something. I actually said to my people, find a country where we actually do well. So far, we haven't found that country. It's just losses with everybody, and we're going to turn that around.
The development comes as German firms and the government brace for a protectionist backlash under Trump, who has pledged to rip up free trade deals and threatened to slap punitive tariffs on German carmakers.
Celia Froelich reporting. Now, opposition against the re-election of long-term serving Confederation of African Football President Issa Hayatou is growing. A group of African Football Association presidents visiting Zimbabwe have come out in support of the Southern African candidate to challenge Hayatou. This is coming out as FIFA President Gianni Infantino is on a visit to Zimbabwe at the invitation of the country's Football Association President Philip Chiyangwa, who is celebrating his election as the Southern Africa Football Association COSAFA. Infantino also met Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe. From Harare, Privilege Mushanri sent us this report.
Welcome to Zimbabwe. Hello, Africa. Hello. Hello, Africa. Hello.
A warm welcome for FIFA President Giovanni Infantino to Harare. But amidst high speculation that his visit was meant to show his support behind the Southern Africa Confederation of African Football CAF election candidate, Infantino and several African football leaders arrived in Harare yesterday and will stay until today. He was invited by Zimbabwe Football Association President Philip Chiyangwa to attend his belated 58th birthday and ascendance to the Southern Africa Football Association President's celebrations. However, the presence of a dozen African Football Association leaders has raised speculation that the gathering was meant to scheme against long-serving CAF president Issa Hayatou. 70-year-old Hayatou has led CAF for 7 terms spanning over 29 years. Nigerian Football Federation Amaju Melvin Pinnick feels Hayatou is no longer fitting in the progressive dispensation that Africa needs to pursue.
Is that bridge that we need between the older generation of administrators and the younger generations? And I don't have any regret doing what I've done, you know, because after the scandal that befell FIFA, all their leaderships have gone.
Responding to questions on whether he's backing the Southern African candidate and the departure of Hayatou, the FIFA president said Africa holds the decision on the next continental football leader.
We are in the football movement in a democracy, and whatever the CAF members, the African football associations, will decide in their own autonomy, in their own democratic mindset and spirit, will be the right decision, and I will support whatever decision, of course, is taken by the membership of CAF.
The outcome of the CAF elections will determine the Continental Football Body's relationship with FIFA. FIFA President Infantino has agreed to a significant increase of funding to Africa from $21 million to $94 million annually. Africa is looking at doubling the number of slots at an expanded World Cup of 48 teams from 31 in 2026. Africa currently only has 5 slots.
Privileged missionary in Harare. Now, football is one of the topics that attracts lots of clicks. I suppose people have been talking about that as well, Privilege, isn't it?
Well, yes, Ayeko, there's been a lot of excitement about Infantino's visit to Zimbabwe. He came promising to revamp Zimbabwean football and is also pushing for an increase of the number of African teams that take part in the FIFA World Cup. But his visit has not gone down very well with Issa Hayatou, the boss of African football.
I gather there is a lot of excitement about his visit, but what really hasn't gone well?
Well, apparently, Philip Chiyangwa, who is the newly elected COSAFA president, did not invite Issa Hayatou for his victory celebration and his birthday. And it is also worth noting that his party coincides with the first anniversary of Infantino's election as FIFA president.
Is that the reason why he wouldn't be inviting someone? Well, we'll get back to that a little later, Crispin. But for now, You're listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And Crispin Mwakideo.
Now, yet to come, we shall be having our blog report as well as Charo joining me in the studio to talk a little bit more on what is happening around the world. But first, we shall go to the donors conference that was taking place in the Norwegian capital, Oslo, where donors have pledged over 600 million euro to tackle the urgent humanitarian crisis affecting northern Nigeria and the Lake Chad Basin. The meeting that drew foreign ministers from the region, including representatives of the African Union, acknowledged that the situation was alarming and needed urgent attention. Jen Nyingi with the report.
According to the latest UN report, 7 million people are in desperate need of aid, and the same number at risk of starvation, with northern Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon and Niger being the most affected. Western countries have come together to address the alarming situation. Speaking at a one-day international donor conference in Oslo, Norwegian Foreign Affairs Minister Børge Brende admitted that people in the affected regions have been left to struggle on their own for decades.
We must act now, jointly, to tackle this complex humanitarian crisis, avoid famine in Nigeria and the Lake Chad region, and secure long-term development that builds resilience.
On his part, a German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel said aid is crucial to prevent the situation getting to us.
We need to focus on stabilizing a situation rather than letting it deteriorate until millions suffer. And this is why Germany is contributing at least 20 million euros over the next 3 years to finance prevention and stabilization measures in the Lake Chad region.
More than 10 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance in the affected countries. Already, the UN has launched a more than $1 billion appeal for Nigeria and the Lake Chad region that are experiencing the worst humanitarian crisis in Africa. Nigerian Foreign Affairs Minister Geoffrey Oyema used the conference to draw attention on his country's effort to address the unfolding problems in the region.
The successes recorded by the Nigerian military unmasked additional existing humanitarian needs, which has attained grave, I might say very grave, proportions. We are mindful of the challenges as well as the opportunities that abound. We're also mindful of the need for intensified rapid response and cooperation to achieve our objectives in this region.
More than 20,000 people have been killed in Nigeria following a seven-year Boko Haram uprising. 2.6 million have been left homeless.
Jen Nyingi with that report.
Blog report.
And now for our blog report, we go to Rwanda, where Nasra Bishumba spoke to Rama Isibo, a blogger whose specialty is politics. She started by asking him when he started blogging. Take a listen.
I began blogging in around 2004. A lot of people were very scared to be critical in Rwanda, but I found my own way of being critical, offering also answers and trying to understand the problem and trying to understand the situation. I knew that I would have to step beyond the comfort zone.
You mentioned something about your blogging being a bit more mature. What are you blogging about right now?
Politics. So blogging about our political situation, but it was also about going into research. I moved into between 5,000 and 10,000 words. Before, I was writing 600 word pieces. Now I was taking weeks at a time and going deep into an issue, looking at complex, delicate issues that we tend to avoid as a society.
What political blogs have you written so far? What particular areas?
My most controversial one, I don't know how I'll get back from that one, it's called A Letter to Frederick Jama. I mean, at that time, you had the M23 rebellion, you had the standoff with the UN, you had donors cutting funds, we had our own army posted on the border. It was like off pressure daily, to the point that most people thought that we were going back to war. I wrote a piece and it was very controversial. Sometimes I think if blogging is done well, it can just bring people back to their senses. The whole point was not to criticize the government per se. It was to say, what are we doing? We're going into another war?
What kind of trouble did it put you in?
ostracization. Since then, I've barely worked in the media. They put a lot of pressure on my family, who put pressure on you. There were threats of treason and other charges and so forth. So blogging in Rwanda, it's not a joke that you can just write your opinions. I mean, your opinions can land you in jail.
Have you at one point felt like quitting?
No, if anything, it's made me want to do it more. I mean, I love this country. I just think that it's, if anything, we just have to do it more. We have to be holding people more to account. I mean, the only time it got bad for me was last year when I was arrested. I had witnessed some police brutality. I put a sound blog just like this on SoundCloud. Within a few hours, I was arrested. I was thrown in solitary confinement for almost 10 days. Charged with genocide, charged with many things. They didn't even understand the laws that they were using. That should be the most serious charge in Rwanda. It should not be used as a joke. That is the problem. Like, we should have separate laws for journalism, separate laws for that, separate. So as I do understand that even bloggers, we still have to have journalistic standards. And people want to blog on so many things, on agriculture, on healthcare. But you can find yourself charged with genocide.
Nasra Mishumba speaking to blogger Rama Isibo in Kigali. And for sport, DW's Charo Josephat from the Kiswahili department joined me to talk about the state of the Bundesliga. Now, Charo, RB Leipzig seems to be giving Bayern Munich a ride for their first position, having pulled up just 5 points below Munich. What else could happen?
RB Leipzig has always been looked at as a team that may not really pose a very big danger in the league this season, but it has proved to be a very dangerous team of young players who can change the game at any time. They are fast, they are quick, they are full of surprises. So, obviously, what I expect in this game, they are going to win it and they are going to narrow down the gap between themselves and Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich must work very hard to make sure that they win their game so that they continue to add more points on top of the 50 which they already have. If they lose this game against Hamburg, a game which is going to be played at home in Allianz Arena, then the gap between Bayern Munich and Leipzig will be even slimmer. Or if Bayern is to draw with Hamburg, still that gap will narrow between them and RB Leipzig.
Yeah, like you just said, Leipzig is full of surprises. Now, that draws me to my very next question. And it's in just a few hours from now, Bremen will be facing off Wolfsburg. Do we expect some surprises there as well?
Wolfsburg has not been very strong in this season. It has had a lot of problems and challenges with players and the coach. They lost a very important player, Julian Draxler, who is now playing in France with Paris Saint-Germain. Werder Bremen has a very good squad with Serge Gnabry expected to do wonders today. And Gnabry could be very key in trying to help Werder Bremen to overcome Wolfsburg.
Now, we have 6 games scheduled for tomorrow. And one of the most anticipated is, of course, the game between Freiburg and Dortmund, which has actually pulled up, taking up position number 3. Now, who do you think will take the day tomorrow?
Not very easy to predict. Why? Because Freiburg playing at home. There is all the noise, there is all the support, you know, and you get some energy in you, some adrenaline that works in you, and you are just full of surprises. You get speed. But again, Borussia Dortmund is already at third position. They are assured, if they continue there, to stay there, they are assured of a position in the Champions League next season. And they are really struggling to make sure that that happens. If they lose that game, then they will come down and then maybe begin to struggle for a European spot in the Europa League. And I'm sure they don't want to do that. But they have an uphill task against Freiburg, because Freiburg is not just a team you can write off like that, because they are now number 9 and they are working very hard also to be able to play in the Europa League. So again, this game is going to be very tough in front of home fans. They don't want to lose those 3 points, which are very important. If they get them, you know, they come closer to playing in the Europa League.
Joseph Atcharo from the Kiswahili department updating us on what's happening in the world of sport. Remember, our Kiswahili department as well as the Hausa department do air live matches of the Bundesliga.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Ayeka, going back to the Oslo Donor Conference for Lake Chad region, we did post an article on our DW Africa Facebook page. And Kanjo Khan Ka asked, when will African governments start taking their responsibilities? It is such a shame after more than half a century of independence, we are still behaving like babies who need to be cared for. What do you think about that comment, Jen?
That's an interesting comment. I would ask the same question, but maybe it takes two to tango.
Right. And then there was Kwaku Evans who commented, I wonder if the so-called aid money reaches its intended recipients.
Another question that is very prominent, especially in the academic world, people, there's that debate that's going on, and it's a long story that we can't even talk about.
I know about it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on. Then there is Jata Lamine who wrote and said, they, the people in the Lake Chad region, that is, they really need assistance. Another story that we've been following is about the rumors of the Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He's been ill in London and for a while now, and he's on a medical leave. And there are rumors that are spreading about his condition at the moment.
Isn't that just part of human nature? We are good at speculating.
Yeah, it is very true. It is worth mentioning, though, that that he is not dead. He is very, very much alive, but he is ill.
Yeah.
And his absence is causing people, you know, to start
nervous.
Spreading, to be nervous and start talking and spreading rumors and speculations, you know, all that kind of thing.
Crispin, you've been following these on social media. I certainly know that there have been lots of comments to this effect. The people commenting, are they particularly Nigerians, or is this something that is drawing lots of comments from all over the African continent, probably?
Well, obviously, it will be the Nigerians because they feel more affected about the absence of their president. But anyway, what we did as Deutsche Welle is that, of course, we don't engage in the speculations or the rumors, but we did put up a picture gallery of 10 African presidents who have died while in office. And that picture gallery got a lot of comments and a lot of feedback from people. And here are just a few of them. Johnson Ozuegbu said, DW Africa. Now he's referring to us.
Yes.
Do you mind doing Nigerians a favor? Please try to visit Buhari on vacation. I mean, he calls it a vacation, but it's a medical, medical vacation. And get us just 5 minutes of video interview with him. We are not suggesting that he cuts short his blank check vacation. We just want proof of life.
Could this be something to signal that the Nigerians do love their president? I mean, we can all recollect that he was voted. He got massive support. He got lots of votes there when he won the election, and people were very expectant of him. Is this to suggest that, yeah, we are missing our lovely president?
I think they do. I mean, those who voted for him obviously do love him, and they wish him well, and they wish that he would come back very soon. But then, of course, we have to remember that the former president before, Goodluck Jonathan Yaradua, also died while in office. He's one of those presidents who died. So there is a lot of also concern and worry at the same time.
In other words, Nigerians don't want to see history repeats itself.
I guess so. Anyway, there's Rilwani Ibrahim Uba who said, we just pray for him.
That's a good thing to do.
Right. And then back to South Africa, Ayeko. The hashtags Foreigner March, Chwane Unrest and Xenophobia have been trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
Mavinola tweeted, South Africa can deploy more than 400 security officers to protect one man, and that is President Jacob Zuma, during the State of the Nation address, but can't deploy them to protect thousands.
Question of debate.
And then another user who goes by the name Live Free tweeted, Europeans and other races are very safe and comfortable in Africa than Africans. How ironic.
That's also something interesting. But I don't want us to go into the racism debate.
Right. Ayeko, I don't know whether you're aware, but now China has overtaken...
That is something that we had in today's program and very interesting. Crispin, just give me some quick comments there that
very,
people
very
have
quick,
been talking
very,
about.
Very, very quick one here from Kennedy Mwasha. He says, it's obvious protectionism will have short-term benefits to America, both from a political and economic point of view, but its long-lasting impact in foreign investment will shift to China. In other words, China is now becoming the new United States of America.
Well, let's wait to see how things will develop there. Crispin, let's tell the people one more time how they can comment.
Right, just log into our Facebook and visit DW Africa Facebook page. You'll see a number of articles there. Read them, look at them, and then post your comments below, and we'll read them live on air every weekday.
That's it from us. Me, Jen Ayeka Kumech.
And Crispin Mwakideo.
Have a nice weekend.